I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. This week marks the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion, which many believe sparked the modern gay rights movement. It began on June 28, 1969, when police raided the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in New York City. At the time, police raids of gay bars were common. The lights would go on, patrons would scatter, anxious to protect their privacy and their safety. But this time, patrons of the Stonewall fought back. Six nights of rioting and demonstrations followed. Six nights that set the stage for the development of a formidable civil rights movement. For this week's Wisdom Watch, we're speaking to two men who were there. We'll ask them about what that experience meant to them and what their lives as gay Americans are like four decades later. We have to warn listeners that some language may be offensive. New York City natives Martin Boyce and Danny Garvin were outside the Stonewall Inn when the police vans arrived that night in 1969. And they join us now from our New York bureau. I'd like to welcome you both.
Thank you.
And Martin, I want to start with you. Why was Stonewall such a popular place to hang out?
Well, first of all, it was all about location. I mean, it was like right on Christopher Street. And you could do slow dancing there. It was the only place where you could do slow dancing. And it was like a real bar. And our peers were all in there.
Mm-hmm. Danny, what about you? Were you a frequent Stonewall patron?
Yes, I'm probably the first person who could say that had been in the Stonewall on opening night and on closing night. I just got out of the Navy. I was 18. And I was around the bar, a block at a bar called Julius's, and someone said to me, "What are you doing here? Why aren't you with all the chicken around the corner in this bar that just opened?" And I went around there. It was a stone wall. It was,
what was the chicken?
It was a terminology back then for a young gay person.
Young gay person, okay.
You know, as opposed to an old hen.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So I was a young chicken.
So you went to check it out, and? So,
and I walked, you know, you had to go over there, and you had to knock on the door, and you had to slide open the door to check out who was outside there. And then you went inside and you had to sign your name into a book. And then there was dancing at the back of the bar. But then on the other side, you went to these two other doors. And there was a large dance floor where I saw all these people doing the jerk and Mickey's monkey and line dancing and saying, "Oh, this is never going to last, men dancing with men. This will never last." And I freaked out and I left.
Really?
Yeah. I was still coming out.
Well, what was that like, though? I mean, and forgive me for I hope this doesn't sound like a stupid question, but you had to go through all these doors just to get to a dance floor. Was that just the way it was?
Bars would only last for a few weeks, and then they would be shut down usually. So it was usually by word of mouth that you heard of another bar that opened up. The Stonewall had a good run for almost 3 years there, which was a rarity.
Martin, Danny was telling us that just bars would only last a couple of weeks. Did you expect to be raided if you went to a bar?
No, you didn't expect to be raided, but you could be raided. You knew that.
So what happened when the police arrived? Martin, I wanted to stick with us. What happened? You were down the street. You weren't right at the inn at the time that the police arrived. What happened? What set it off?
Well, there was a lot of commotion that we noticed down the block, and that's where Stonewall was. And a number of people passing would say, I think they're raided. So we decided to go and see what happened. At that point, the paddy wagon started pulling out. And as they pulled out, we were left with the police in front of us. We were forming like an arc around the door or like an amphitheater. And then we started, like zombies, to move forward. And as we kept moving forward, they all of a sudden started moving backwards. In other words, they blinked. And then we looked at them as if, you know, Dachau was liberated and there was nothing between us and our former captors. And we just kept going until they barricaded themselves in the Stonewall. Now they were prisoners of this situation.
Do you remember what that felt like? Did you feel like you won one? Or
no, just not at all. It was the beginning. You know, it was just curiosity. I was watching the police eyes through the speakeasy hole and they were laughing at first, and they thought it was humorous, but there was a tinge of nervousness and a growing sense of alarm when they started smashing the door down and lighting it on fire.
They lit the door on fire.
Well, the Molotov cocktails were thrown that night. There were garbage cans lit on. They were thrown through the window. They were on fire.
Danny, to pick up the thread from there, were you at the Stonewall that night?
I was walking right over to it. The paddy wagon had arrived. I was living on a commune on Bleecker Street. And I was walking over there. I was talking to a friend of mine. We were talking about revolution because we really thought that a revolution was going to come about by the Black Panthers or by the Young Lords. We didn't consider that a revolution would take place within a gay society. You have to realize at the time of the Stonewall, we were still considered sick by the American Psychiatric Association, and all states except Illinois had laws against homosexuality. So you could be arrested for just holding hands with a man on the street or kissing a man on the street.
Danny, did you fight that night? Did you?
I was a pacifist. I screamed pig. I screamed copper. I ran. I can't kill a cockroach to this day, so I'm not going to pick up a brick and throw one at one. But I would taunt.
Martin, what do you think set it off?
Frustration, years of frustration, looking at these police's faces who tormented us and ridiculed us and treated us, at best, tolerated us, and treated us as it was subhuman. It was those faces all the time, framed by those, all the blue cloth, the badge, the hat. Every time we saw them, we knew there was trouble or could be trouble.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Danny Garvin and Martin Boyce. They were there at the 1969 Stonewall Rebellion in New York. It's an event that is widely viewed as the beginning of the modern gay rights movement. Martin, to that point, that was the first night, first couple of nights, and, you know, you had had enough. Or you had just had enough. But did you have a sense that there was more to it than letting off your frustrations at being mistreated? Did you have a sense, well, wait a minute, you know, why are we being treated like this? Or, you know what I mean? How did it become from a couple of nights of street disturbance to something bigger?
Well, that took time. You know, a riot is a kinetic thing and a thing of movement, and a riot is so totally complete. What happened in that little square was an implosion that we couldn't manage to control any longer. It was all a matter of chance, will, and determination then once we started it to finish it.
And could you talk a little bit more? Danny started talking about this. At the time, most states had laws on the books saying that homosexuality was illegal. There was no employment protection. So, Martin, could you just talk a little bit about your life? I mean, were you worried about being arrested at that time? Were you worried that, you know what I mean? How did you live? I mean, if you had a relationship, did you go out of here to keep your family from knowing? How did you live?
Well, for me, it wasn't like that. My father did know. And my father always kept a little container with bail money in it. So he figured that sooner or later something was going to happen to me, leaving the house in scare drag like that. And so he just had a container with money in it and allowed me to call him. I could call him and he would come down and get me out of jail if it was necessary. But I was never arrested.
So he was okay with you? You felt acceptance?
Oh, yes.
What did you do for a living, if you don't mind my asking?
No, I was a student. My mother was an invalid. I would take care of her. And in return, my father paid for my college.
So did you feel a sense of cramped possibility? Do you know what I'm saying? Did you feel that, like, your whole scope, you know how Martin Luther King wrote about the shadow of inferiority, watching it closing in on his children's faces, realizing all the things that he was going to have to tell them they could not do? Do you remember that?
Well, yes. But it was not inferiority that we felt. It was lack of opportunity. I think very few gay people felt any kind of inferiority.
Danny, what about you? You say you were a hippie pacifist. You were living in a commune at the time. But what about you and your sense of yourself as a gay man? You were just coming out at that time. And you had been in the Navy. And what did you think your life was going to be?
I thought I was going to settle down, get married, have 2.3 kids. My idea of, at the time we called them homosexuals, were either very effeminate men who worked in hairdressing parlors, or older men who would sit in movie balconies in 42nd Street or in subway men's bathrooms. So it seemed like a deviant lifestyle to me. I didn't know anybody who was my age until two sailors brought me to Julius's bar, and I got to meet other gay men who were closer to my age. And then when I met the Stonewall, there they were, all 18, 19 years of age. So there was no gay and lesbian community center back then, so if you were a young kid and you came out, the only choice you had was to go to a gay bar.
What do you think Stonewall changed?
The whole action of that night was we never realized how connected we were as a community, that it didn't make a difference if you were a drag queen or if you were a leather queen or if you were just a young kid or if you were an older person over 30. We were all fighting for a right, at least to me, to get back into the bar, to be able to dance, not be oppressed, you know, to be able to have the rights that these heterosexuals are claiming that they have. And I think that's what we're fighting for, which we're still fighting for 40 years later.
Martin, what about you? What do you think Stonewall changed?
Yes, I think before Stonewall, there were really homosexualities. I mean, like, the scare drag queens like me sometimes would be mistreated really by older gay guys or what they call A-gays, the regular gay guys, because we were giving them a bad image. We were divided that way. But all of us in some way knew something about ourselves, and the thing that Stonewall changed is that our individual pride reached a consensus, and now we had a group pride.
I want to play a short clip from you. Earlier this week, President Obama invited hundreds of leaders from the LGBT community to the White House for an event marking the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. I'm sure that's something you may have thought you'd never see, but he did. And let's play a little bit of his remarks. Here's what he had to say.
It's not for me to tell you to be patient any more than it was for others to counsel patience to African Americans who were petitioning for equal rights a half century ago. But I say this, we have made progress, and we will make more. And I want you to know that I expect and hope to be judged not by words, not by promises I've made, but by the promises that my administration keeps.
Martin, I'm going to go to you first. There are those who say, on the one hand, that is amazing. Who would have thought in my lifetime that the President of the United States would be welcoming members of my community to celebrate this event? On the other hand, people say, you know, the progress is still too slow, still baby steps. What do you say?
Yes, because when you're in the battle, and even as we had begun the battle, and towards now the latter part of our lives, this battle's not finished. It's a two-pronged situation. Now, it's not only how homosexuality is treated in our nation. It's a worldwide problem. There now is a universal gay problem in the sense that, all right, we've helped each other in the city and then, of course, across the country and now around the world. I mean, people are being still tortured and still killed in some countries, and it weighs heavily on our minds.
Danny, what about you?
I was just thinking of the guy who got beat up this week on East 85th Street for being gay and fag-bashed on the street, and how these words that Obama would say would feel to him and say, you know, wait, be patient. Not when you're still being fag-bashed. Not on a gay pride day, and not on the Upper East Side on East 85th Street.
There are those, as you know, who don't even agree with President Obama's relationship of the gay rights movement to the civil rights movement for other people in this country. They just say, I don't see the connection. And there are those who just say, look, you know, and they associate the gay rights movement with white men like yourselves, and others might even say privileged white men who have no other issues to worry about. Would you talk about that, Martin? Will you talk about
yes,
that?
Oh, yes, because the militant fighters in the Stonewall and the ones that really made it possible, we were all working class or many of us poor. Some of them were destitute. The great fighters were mostly destitute. I guess you could say they had little to lose in fighting, but they also had a higher aspect of frustration. Because they had to make their money on the street somehow. I'm sure some of them turned tricks and everything. So you can imagine the danger they were in from the vice squad, the police, and so on. In David Carter's book on Stonewall, there's a photo booth snapshot of me, Birdie, and Thomas Lanigan Schmidt. Birdie is a Puerto Rican black person. We were integrated. I mean, we didn't have that problem.
But you see what I'm saying? That when people think the gay rights movement now, I don't know that people primarily think of it as a diverse movement.
Yes, I think you're right. I don't think they do because, I mean, you know, the organization was left to the middle class, and that's very different. I mean, I had a friend, Jerome, a black friend who's 30 years old. It was about 10 years ago. He did not know Stonewall occurred because African-American gays are fighting their own battle. They have not completed that battle yet, but they're determined to do it. But it takes much longer. It's hard to get rid of cultural mores, and some ethnic groups feel it stronger than others.
Danny, what do you say about this? To those who say, I don't see the connection between your struggle and the civil rights struggles of others. I see this as a group of white men, privileged men, who can look after their own
the mental condition.
Yeah, their own stuff, and really don't see it as connected to a broader rights movement. What do you say to that?
A broader rights movement. I've heard it stated that way. I've heard it stated very clearly that way. I get so angry when I hear this. You know, it's like, but if you're going to tell me that, then don't tell me that all men are created equal. You know, just tell me that the Constitution is not true. If you're willing to tell me that, then I'll settle for that. This is the way this country's run. But as long as that's written down there, all men are created equal, then I believe that all men and women are created equal and have the same rights.
What would be the fulfillment of the movement for you?
Complete equality. If I walked out of the studio, I have a partner here. We're together for 17 years. We never became domestic partners or anything now. But if I got hit by a car and was rushed to an emergency room, he could not get in to see me where my family could, and they can make all the decisions. I mean, 17 years, that wouldn't happen to a straight person.
Do you think that you will see that in your lifetime?
Oh, yes. I think we are angry enough now. I think we are tired of this. We're tired of seeing good men and women discharged from our services who are so intelligent, such brave fighters, and such good Americans, to lose it over this don't ask, don't tell. And yet you're screaming that you want to win this war or bring a country to a democracy. You are losing excellent school teachers at times in certain parts of this country. You're losing some great clergy people. I think, yes, I will see it in my lifetime. I think I'll probably be in a wheelchair, but I will see it in my lifetime.
Martin, what about you? What would be the fulfillment of the movement for you? And do you think you will see it in your lifetime?
I hope to see it in my lifetime. I mean, I'd like to see an integrated society, a society in which this is no longer a question. You don't have to get on a radio show to explain anything about white males or this or that. Just that, you know, we're a people. Maybe other aspects could be discussed, but not basic human rights.
Martin Boyce, Danny Garvin, they both participated in the 1969 Stonewall Rebellion. It was a pivotal event in the development of the modern gay rights movement. They were both kind enough to join us from our New York Bureau. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.